Hey, everybody, this is Pam, and you're listening to the occasional male series of podcasts called He Stutters, She Asks Him. And you can find that at the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com. Or you can also find it easily as a download on iTunes. So today I'm excited to have as a guest a new friend who you the listeners and I will be getting to know at the same time. So I'm excited to have you on the show with us today. Hey, Anthony, how's it going?
Hey, Pam, I'm pretty good. How about you?
Good. It's the middle of the week, so I always get a little bit more excited about the weekend coming up than I do if it was like Sunday and we're looking at Monday. So to get us started, could you formally introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, where you're from, and what keeps you busy?
Okay. My name is Anthony Crozier. I am from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm 25 years old. What keeps me busy, I guess, is my job as a software developer, which I enjoy quite a bit. It's always extremely interesting, and there's a lot happening. And in addition to my job, I'm a student. I take evening classes at our college nearby. And whenever I have free time, I also enjoy playing some sports and hanging out with friends and family.
Wow. Yeah. You definitely have a lot going on to keep you busy. So right off the bat, I'm curious, what got you interested in software engineer work?
So I was actually at our community college, and I was going into classes for healthcare, and I heard about an opportunity for a software development job from this guy in our parish, and he's on the software development team. So he told me, hey, we have an opportunity here, and you don't have to have experience, but we're able to take you on and train you, and if you want, you can apply, and we'll see how it goes. So I did some quick research on software development, and I decided that it would be something that I would be extremely interested in. And I applied, and I went through a series of interviews that they had, and I ended up getting hired. So
that's wow. Yeah. What was interviewing like? I know a lot of people who stutter just absolutely like melt down when it comes to in interviews, because that's hard for anybody, but particularly when you stutter. So what was that series of interviews like?
The interviews were pretty challenging. It all began with the first interview I had. They sent an email and asked me if I would be able to do a phone call interview that would be about a half an hour. And I responded, and I told them that I stuttered, and I just wanted to be extremely open about it. And I also told them that it would be a bit more challenging in interviews because that's a pretty high pressure situation. So I explained that to them and they obviously said no problem. And we had the interview, and also in the interview itself, I brought it up again. And I just tried to be open about it and explain it to them and explain the pros and cons, or I don't know if I brought up like specific pros and cons, but I just told them that how it has helped me in certain ways. And it's helped me to become more open and also become a more determined in solving problems and in handling challenges. And that was an important aspect of the job. So, and after the phone interview, we had an in-person interview, and that was a little more challenging because that was with the whole team. They switched off two people at a time, and it lasted about 3 hours, the whole interview process. So it was just two people, and they kept on switching off and on. But I think it kind of helped to have basically the same interview a few times over with the new people, because I could practice on what I'm saying, and I had a bit more experience in it. And I also just acknowledge my stuttering every time, just to be open about it and explain how it has helped me in the past. But overall, I was extremely intimidated by the interview process, but I'm happy it happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me just say kudos to you for, you know, right off the bat disclosing to people that you stutter, because that's a real conundrum for a lot of people who stutter. They're afraid they're going to be judged as incompetent, or, you know, especially like if you said you disclosed that in the initial email phase. I've heard from people that have told me that when they tell people that they stutter, all of a sudden the request for the interview is rescinded. You know, they say, yeah. So like to hear you say right off the bat that you were comfortable enough to disclose your stuttering, to me, that signals, you know, a certain confidence about yourself that that I know that a lot of people don't have. They're still caught in that peer, you know, that phase or that rut of, oh, you know, people are going to have the stereotypical views of what stuttering is about, and I won't have a chance. So I really like that you know, kind of took the bull by the horns, and you said that you consider it a strength. Can you elaborate a little more about that?
I think of stuttering as a strength in a few ways. I think a big way that I think it's a strength, as I mentioned earlier, I guess, it's helped to build up my determination, because everything for stuttering, or for people who stutter, is slightly harder, it seems like, just like normal interactions. It's always slightly harder. And I think that dealing with things that are slightly harder are able to help to improve you as a person and to give you determination in handling obstacles. Because if you're able to handle a speech obstacle, you might be able to handle other obstacles, and you might be the type of person that's strong enough to handle the obstacles that possibly other people who haven't had as many obstacles aren't able to handle as well. So I think that's a way that it's helped. I also think, I was just thinking about this the other day, I don't know if it's as obvious, but I think when you're speaking to a person, at times people are too scared about being awkward with a person. And I think to have a good conversation that goes beneath the surface, I don't want to say it has to be awkward, but at least it has to push a few limits to keep everyone interested, it seems like. And I think, I mean, I don't know if I'm expressing this properly, but it seems like to have a great conversation, it has to be interesting enough. And sometimes to do that, you have to take some chances. And I think stuttering has kind of helped me to do that, because often when you're having interactions with people, it is slightly awkward, mm-hmm. and you have to deal with that. And it makes you into the person that is good at handling slightly awkward situations. So, yeah, I don't know if I've expressed that too clearly, because it was just an idea I had from a few days ago, but I thought that was that's also a strength, possibly, from stuttering.
Yeah, for sure. And you did explain it really well. Like, to me, what I took from what you were saying as I listened is that, you know, when you take the risk to maybe go out of your comfort zone a little bit and, you know, openly disclose and share that you stutter, to me, when we do that, it invites the other person to be authentic about something about themselves. And then, you know, if two of you are engaging, you know, and you shared something vulnerable and personal about yourself, and then the other person feels that you gave them permission to do similar, then you're able to have more of a, deeper conversation to get to know each other, rather than, you know, like the surface BS that we sometimes have with people, right? Like, people ask, yeah, how are you doing, but don't really expect an answer, you know? So, yeah. Right. So what you described, you know, just like really, you described that really well. Like, you're sharing something of yourself, which therefore invites reciprocity from the other person. And that makes a lot of sense when we talk about relationship building, right?
Absolutely. Yes, I completely agree.
Now, during those interviews, you know, especially ones where you were switching off and meeting with two different people, did anybody take an opportunity to ask about your stuttering, or did it just like you mentioned it and then boom, it wasn't an issue?
I don't believe anyone asked me any follow-up questions on it. I just explained to them different situations in the past that I was able to handle, and I talked to them about it, and I don't believe anyone else had any other questions about it.
Yeah, that's great. And again, that's an example of like you're using it as a strength, you know, like facing adversity and handling it, and, you know, figuring out maybe more than one way to attack something, attack a challenge, probably has a great deal to tie into your career right now, software engineering. You probably also have to like look at things from, you know, a different point of view sometimes to be able to see a problem from a different perspective. Right? Or am I all wet? Because I don't know too much about software engineering.
You're completely right. It is all about analyzing. Yeah. It is analyzing problems from different points of view and finding the correct solution to it. So I do think you have a good point there.
Yeah. Now, you said that you initially were going to go into healthcare. Were you interested in medicine, being, you know, a nurse or a doctor? What were you thinking about?
I had been interested in becoming a physician's assistant. It seemed like a pretty interesting job, and the pay was decent too. And at that point, I was just going to school, and I wanted to end up with a decent job and just go through the process, I guess. Yeah. So I don't think my heart was in it necessarily. I was still in the early stages, and I was more just looking for a good career, for something that I was interested in. And healthcare seemed like a good career, and also seemed pretty interesting. But when this other opportunity came up, after looking into it, I definitely preferred it. And I also like the idea about combining my work and education. So as I'm working, I can take evening classes, and the classes help with work, and the work helps with classes, and it all helps each other out, I guess.
Yeah. And how great was that, that the employer was willing to hire you on, even though you didn't have the specific educational background, that they were willing, you know, to train you with what you need. That, you know, you don't hear that much today. So
absolutely, right. Yeah, I'm extremely appreciative of that.
Yeah, and, you must have really made an impression on them.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I was still a bit after they hired me. I was like, okay. I mean, I was extremely happy, but I was also slightly perplexed. So once I started working, I just wanted to make an effort to work as hard as possible and prove them right.
Yeah, well, I guess you're doing it, right? yeah. So you're going to school at night. So are you studying software engineering?
I am. Yeah, I'm currently just taking a few classes every semester, two or three classes that have to do with the types of projects I'm working on, and that will. Within next spring, I'm going to get my associate's degree. So it's slow moving. And then after that, I'll probably continue with my bachelor's degree. So it isn't a traditional route to college, I guess, but it'll hopefully get me there slowly but surely.
Yeah. Well, you sound like a very determined person. We've already established that at the start of our conversation. So do you go into an office, or are you working from home due to these special circumstances that we all find ourselves in?
Yeah, I'm typically working at an office, but ever since March, we've started working from home. And we recently heard that we might be working from home until the end of the year. So that'll be interesting.
How do you find it? I mean, are you doing like a lot of video chats with colleagues and stuff, or, you know, how are you managing?
It's been pretty good. The main way we communicate with each other is just through calling, I guess, and also using screen share, and we also do use video chats occasionally, but typically it's just calling. So that's been interesting.
Phone calling?
Yes. it's been interesting because that's always been kind of a bigger challenge for me, but it's definitely been good practice having to do it an hour or two of every day. So that's very interesting.
Well, that's great that you consider that to be like a challenge, but you're smiling about it, and I can hear in your tone that you're okay with it because, like I said at the beginning, many, many, many people who stutter, like, they fear the phone the worst because you can't see the other person. You're imagining that they may, you know, be like, you know, smirking or making, you know, a funny face, or really not paying attention to you. And personally, I prefer video chat over the phone because at least I can see the other person. And if I'm in mid block or mid stutter, they can at least see that instead of, you know, jumping over me, which I find happens a lot on the phone. When people don't know that you're still trying to utter, you know, a word or a sentence. So kudos to you for using the phone as much as you do every day.
Oh, I appreciate that. And it is slightly easier because the people that I'm always calling are just people on the team. So it's people that I'm always interacting with, and all of them are great to talk to and are extremely patient and everything. So I'm definitely appreciative of that. And I also feel like in terms of just using obstacles or problems as opportunities, I think my mentality on that for sure has changed, I think, because in high school and probably after a bit, I was always extremely intimidated by these sorts of things. And I remember I went to my first NSA meeting at the beginning of high school, and their whole mantra of being open about your stutter and stuttering openly and not hiding it and explaining to people that you stutter, all that was extremely intimidating to me. Because I always had been extremely quiet about it and tried to hide it as much as possible. But I found that just going through, I mean, even if you're trying to make your interactions with people like as smooth and unobtrusive as possible, I still think it's easier just to tell them you stutter and to stutter openly instead of switching words, which I used to do all the time, and trying to hide it. So I guess after that, I've been, over the last few years, I've been trying to be as open about it as possible, and I think that's helped. Decent amount.
So you said you went to your first NSA chapter meeting at the beginning of high school. Did you continue to attend?
I went to the NSA meeting when they had it in Cleveland, and that's how I heard about it, and I just took the opportunity since it was in the area. And the year after, we went out to Texas when they had it out there, and I haven't been to any other conferences after that, but we do have a small group here in Cleveland that I still go to.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been nice meeting people and hearing their stories and everything, so I'm extremely appreciative of having that there. And also, while I'm on the subject, I just want to bring up the podcast you have, and also the podcast that that Peter Rice has had a Stutter Talk. Actually, I don't think he's the host anymore, but I don't remember the name. So those two podcasts actually have helped me a huge amount, especially when at the beginning, when I first started my work, it was a bit challenging dealing with new people and with stuttering. And hearing the stories on these podcasts have helped me, because these are people who have been through the challenges, and they just explain how they handled the challenges and also how things improved after they opened up about their stuttering.
Yeah, well, thank you for that feedback. I definitely appreciate when I hear people, first of all, just acknowledging that they do listen to podcasts, because I do too. I do one exclusively for women, and that's really my bigger focus. But I also do this one, for men who stutter. And for both of them, I just kind of had the thought, the belief, when I began these things, that people who stutter need a place to tell their story, because we all have a story. And sometimes people who stutter think, no, I don't, because I can't even get out what I want to say. But, you know, that is in part of the story. So I'm happy to hear that, you know, listening to other people, you know, had an impact on you, because I felt the same way when I went to my first NSA meeting back in 2007, so 13 years ago. It was the first time I'd met somebody else who stuttered. And that, for me, was just like one of those, like, watershed moments, you know? It was like, I truly had believed I was the only one. And I don't know, like, even, you know, when I went there and I saw other women who sounded like me, it was a big deal. And just finally having that support after so many years of feeling really isolated, and like you, trying to hide it and be covert and avoid situations and switch words and all that jazz. It's so much easier to just stutter openly, and if I need to, tell people that I stutter, because then you can get on with it. You can get on with talking about what, you know, what it is you want to say. So I think just hearing other people and how they experienced a similar, you know, life challenge does make a huge difference in people's lives.
I completely agree. And yeah, that's why I'm appreciative of the NSA and your podcast, just because it's nice to hear other stories. Because at times it feels like you're a bit isolated, but yeah, hearing the other stories is pretty important, I think.
Yeah, it is. It makes a big difference. Have you always stuttered since you were a little kid?
I believe I have. Yeah, I think I started stuttering as soon as I started talking. I'm not entirely sure. I'll have to ask my parents. I haven't ever asked them, but I'm almost positive. I mean, I've always stuttered as far as I can remember. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there have definitely been ups and downs in terms of like how easy it is or how severe my stuttering is, but I've always had it.
Mm-hmm. Was your family, you know, comfortable with it, supportive? I mean, it's tough when parents see their kids stuttering and they're not, you know, like, they don't know what to do, and sometimes they just don't do anything.
I would say my family was always extremely supportive. And my mom would go above and beyond in terms of helping out and trying to find a speech therapist. And I mean, she still went through those things like early on where she reads that people who stutter just need to relax. So we went through that whole phase. But I mean, that's understandable. It's you just don't understand it completely. But mm-hmm. Yeah, she always tried to find me a speech therapist. And that's how we ended up with a speech therapist who also stutters actually, and has been awesome and extremely helpful. Mm. And through her, we were pointed to the NSA. And yeah, overall, my parents have been extremely helpful and always extremely patient. And any time there is any issue or anything, they're always happy to talk about it and just extremely supportive through the whole journey.
Mm. Did you do speech therapy for like most of your school career?
I had it probably about half the time I was in school. It was off and on. Speech therapy was never too helpful for me until I found the speech therapist that pointed me to the NSA, and I found her up in about eighth grade, I believe. So ever since then, I've worked with her throughout high school and after high school off and on. So it's been nice to have her. But other than that, I found speech therapy was not overly helpful. I don't know if it's just my experience and the speech therapist I had, and it probably was, but until I found a speech therapist that emphasize both the techniques to help you to improve speaking, but also the whole mentality change that needed to occur, I didn't see much difference, I would say.
Yeah, and you make a good point. You wonder if it's just you, but I have heard from so many adults who have shared their stories on the podcast or just that I've met through various NSA activities. I've heard from many, many adults who shared that stuttering therapy early in their lives was a disaster. You know, like it had always been the mentality, it seemed, for so many people that therapists were looking to go in, identify there's a problem, teach techniques to, you know, fix it, and then eradicate it. And then, you know, if you, as a person who stutters, didn't do a good enough job of, you know, using the tools that they taught you, then it was our fault. We failed. And yeah. I heard so many people, you know, who had those early experiences of feeling like they failed. That should never be the outcome of therapy. And fortunately, you know, I'm hearing more and more positive experiences with younger people like yourself who have, you know, who have worked with therapists who get it, because not everybody that's an SLP gets stuttering. I've heard that it's very intimidating to work with stuttering because it's not a quick fix like articulation or phonation or even a lisp, you know, like those things can be quote unquote fixed. But stuttering, once you're an adult who stutters, you know, you're probably always going to stutter. And I've heard stories of some SLPs shying away from that because they don't want to work with somebody where they're not going to see like incremental progress. So you've been lucky.
I have been. Yeah, my therapist has been extremely helpful. I don't see her. I don't see her currently. I reached a point, I guess, where it seemed to the results sort of seemed to plateau, and I don't. So now, if in a few months it gets particularly hard, I'll go back and see her. But yeah, I could definitely see though how it would be a bit difficult for most SLPs to deal with stuttering, especially if they're just trained to deal with all types of speech disorders and not necessarily stuttering in particular.
Right.
I could see how that would be a bit intimidating.
Yeah. And, you know, since stuttering is, you know, relatively rare, like only 1% of the population, it's possible that school-based SLPs may never run into, you know, working with a kid who stutters. So then if they get one on their caseload, like maybe that kid is the only kid that stutters in school, you know, so there's so much more involved than just teaching techniques that is going to fix the stutter. But you also have to look at the psychological components of, you know, maybe the kid is the only kid in school who stutters and feels, you know, left out or feels, you know, different. And so I think successful SLPs need to be able to blend both counseling and fluency enhancing techniques if that's what the person who stutters wants.
I completely agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. So then, you know, I think I did not have therapy as a child. I came up in a generation where, when I started stuttering, my father viewed it as something horribly bad, reflecting on him having a kid who was different. It was not a good experience for me. He yelled and screamed at me and told me to shut up and we don't talk like that and spit it out and stuff like that. And
that would be tough.
Yeah, it was tough. And then it became a situation where, well, I didn't want to hear that crap from my father. So, you know, I had to make sure I didn't stutter. And the only way I could figure out how to not stutter was to not talk. And that didn't help me. So when I got to third grade, a third grade teacher recommended therapy, which I think I did twice. And then my father pulled me and the rest of my siblings out of public school and put us in Catholic school, which did not offer therapy.
Oh, okay.
He didn't want one of his kids in therapy because it then meant that there was something wrong with one of his kids. It was just, it was the times, I guess. And
yeah,
it was. So, you know, growing up, you know, having had that experience thinking that, oh my God, like something that I'm doing is bad because it's eliciting that type of response from my father. It was no wonder that I tried to hide it as much as I could because I was afraid other adults would act like that when I spoke. So
yeah,
it's very heartening today to see things like the NSA or Friends, the Association for Young People Who Stutter. It's really helpful to see that there are programs and places for kids, because it would have made a huge difference in my life.
I completely agree. Yeah. So did you just start to like open up about stuttering when you met with the NSA? Or it was about that time? Okay.
Yeah. So I was like the most covert person you could even imagine for 30 plus years. I mean,
okay.
I was with a partner for 20 years and he didn't even know I stuttered. I mean, wow. That's pretty intense, right? Like,
yeah.
And so it kind of took a real rock bottom moment. And I got fired from a job in 2006 because of stuttering. But that's a long story. I did hire an attorney and make a complaint with the EEOC. It was a very tumultuous time, but all of a sudden I didn't have a job to go to and didn't have anywhere to go. So that's when I began to, you know, do an internet search on stuttering. And I found out, you know, about the NSA and that there was a local chapter in my home community, 15 minutes away. Like, had I known that? But yeah, so I went to my first conference 2 months after having walked into the Albany, New York NSA chapter and met other people. So yeah, I have really not been open about my stuttering until, you know, 13 or so years ago. So I had all that baggage to unpack. And it took me probably a good year and a half to 2 years after finding the NSA to really find my voice, because the covert behavior was so ingrained that I was still, you know, switching words unconsciously. Like, I wasn't even aware that I was still doing it for such a long time. And now I can't do that anymore. I can't hardly even switch a word anymore, because like my muscle memory to do that is gone now. It's just really interesting, you know, like that happens. Like, we get that, we switch words on autopilot.
I have had that exact same experience. A couple of years ago, I made the conscious decision to try to be open about it, stop switching words, and because I just thought it would be easier rather than always, like, when people ask me a question, like, I'm putting myself through hoops in order to answer it a certain way, and the phrasing was weird. So I just made up my mind to stop switching words, just be open about it, and I thought it would be an instantaneous switch, but my brain was just hardwired to continue to do that and use certain habits that made it easier to speak, but which hurt me in the long run. So yeah, I would say now I'm definitely more open about it, but it was definitely harder than I expected to stutter openly.
Yeah, and you made a good point. You know, like our brain, like the neural pathways, right? Like, just get wired for one way, and then I think, at least for me, because I've got more experience stuttering than you do. You know, at least for me, I had to gradually, like, you know, probably reprogram my neural pathways. By stuttering openly and kind of like short circuiting all those automatic impulses to just immediately switch a word. It is hard. It's definitely hard.
Absolutely it is. Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely harder than I expected.
Now we're gonna have to wind down soon. Like, this always happens, like, when two people who stutter get together and we start chatting, like, the time just like flies. But I did want to ask you one and it may you're not comfortable with this question, but okay. I've noticed that you and I stutter very differently. Yeah. I have more repetitions, and you seem to have more silent blocks. Is that is that harder for you? Like, I just get the sense that it's like, it could be exhausting to stutter like that. I'm just curious.
It is at times. I would say, I don't know if I got the silent blocks from habit, but maybe when I tried to hide my stuttering more in high school, it was more noticeable to have audible stuttering rather than inaudible. So maybe that's a result of that. But I would definitely say that it is harder. I mean, I think just when I have audible blocks rather than inaudible blocks, it's easier to have the audible ones because you have a bit more control over it. Whereas if it's a silent block, it's like you don't have control over it, and also you're just hanging in space or hanging in time until it is released. So yeah, and I've kind of tried to move my blocks over to audible because it feels like that would be a lot easier, and I don't know if that's possible because I have had audible blocks in the past, and mm-hmm. I don't know if you can just switch them over like that, but if you could, that would be nice. Just not to artificially change how I speak, but it would be nice to stutter with a bit more control.
Yeah, or with more ease, maybe. And because you said you do a lot of phone calls, like, do you ever get somebody saying like, "Hello, are you there?" Like, if you block, like, yeah. when you start the call.
That happens at times. It honestly probably doesn't happen as much as you'd expect it, because I kind of try to make it obvious when I'm on a block that I am on a block by maybe making it audible a bit, or if I'm talking to a person that I don't normally talk to, like. Right before I started this, I was calling a service provider, and that actually happened. He was like, "Hey, I can't hear you. Are you there?" And I told him I had a speech impediment, he was immediately like apologetic and like, "Hey, like, it's okay." So, and that's always my experience. Like, at times, yeah, that's, I can't think of any exceptions to this, where I've told people that I have a speech impediment and that it might be a bit slower, so I appreciate your patience, and that just always seems to clear it up. And when I'm just in mid-conversation and they know I stutter, but I'm still having a block, I guess maybe that happens at times, but I honestly don't think it happens enough to be a huge issue, or I'm just used to, if it happens, just giving the person a heads up, I'm still speaking. So I'd appreciate your patience.
You know, one day somebody asked me, this was quite a while ago, but I can remember it like it was yesterday, somebody asked me, what does it feel like when you're in a block? Because I have blocks, but not, you know, not as long as yours, but yeah. I'd be interested, like, what does it feel like when you're stuck there?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting, because in every other activity you do, it seems like the heart, especially if you're using your body, the harder you try, the more results you get. But with the block, that's not how it is. So you're still trying to get it out. But on the other hand, you're like easing back and you're trying to get the right amount of the tension to still get it out, but not to, if you try too hard, you don't get it out. But if you don't try hard enough, you don't get it out. So it's like, it's like there's kind of a sweet spot there. So I mean, as I just described it, like you always have to try. It isn't as exhausting as it sounds, I guess. And after you get used to it, I guess it's not awful. But it is, I guess the hard part about it is just the uncertainty. After you begin it, you know there has to be an ending, but you aren't sure how to reach the ending, or if you're able to reach it, even though you know in your head you're able to reach it because you have in the past. But at the time you begin, you're uncertain as to how long it'll take. So
yeah, you just really illustrated that really well. I remember my answer to the person that asked me what it felt like to be in a block, and particularly like during conversation. I remember saying, it's like falling off a cliff and the other person didn't even notice. You know, like, I don't know if that makes sense to you, but like, to me, it feels like, damn, a whole bunch just happened here in this 15 seconds, and the other person doesn't even know. And it was like this intense moment, and it's just absolutely weird.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that. It's like, as you're talking to a person, you're dealing with this huge thing, and then the other person is just like on hold, just waiting until it's over. So
right, and they might not have a clue about something just happened. So
yeah, absolutely.
Wow, this has been such a great conversation. I feel like we could talk for much longer. But my experience tells me that people don't listen to podcasts that are more than an hour. So I do try to keep them. But this was such a great conversation. Thank you for joining me and for sharing parts of your story.
Yeah, I was happy to, and I am honored to be on. So I appreciate you having me.
Thank you. And this has been He Stutters, She Asks Him.